Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford, joined by my able co-host, Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
Hello, John.
How are you, Fintan?
I'm good. A little bit hot. It's very hot here the last few days. Apart from that, all good.
I was hoping for a little more, I've got to be honest.
I lead a very quiet life, John. I lead a very quiet life.
Do all chairmen lead quiet lives, or?
I've no idea. I don't know many other chairmen.
But you must get an idea of this when you're invited to the Power 50 or whatever the fuck it is in Ibiza. Or whatever.
Very few chairmen there.
What? How come? Are they all CEOs?
Yeah, typically.
Whoa.
Or founders, that kind of thing.
That's interesting.
I know.
I'm not a founder, but I have founded.
or floundered.
Which is, you know, it's interesting that the two words are so close, but so far apart. So, gambling industry, eh?
Whew. Whew. Another week.
Yeah. It's been crazy.
Cray cray, as the kids say.
Oh, they really did say that several years ago.
It's only just got to Amsterdam.
Dude, I'm from Shropshire in England. They've only just got flares and fire.
Fire.
So we've got two episodes this week, and this is the first episode.
Yeah.
And this episode, we're joined by a gentleman new to the podcast. By the name of David Danzis. David is a writer, has been for some time, specializing in the northeast of the United States, New Jersey, New York State, probably a little bit of Pennsylvania as well, I would have thought. And I asked him to come on because I read an article he wrote that was on PlayNJ. About how just looking at earnings, just looking at turnover, it doesn't actually show you when there's a problem. And it's a little bit of jiggery poker.
There's an old business saying, what is it? Something like turnover is vanity, profit is sanity. I think that's the...
I wouldn't know. I don't have either. One day I hope to have one.
This time next year, Rodders. This time next year.
Yeah. So, you know, are you familiar with Only Fools and Horses?
Very much so.
So that is Fenton's quoting a classic British sitcom called Only Fools and Horses, very, very famous in the UK. And you know, sometimes a very, very funny show. Interestingly... Do you remember the character Boycey?
Yes.
So Boycey was played by an actor called John Challis. And John Challis bought a place called Wigmore Hall, which is in South Shropshire. It's just outside Ludlow, where I'm from.
All roads lead to Ludlow.
And I was in the street the one day and I was chatting to my mate. And John Challis walks by and he suddenly shouts out, "Liz, congratulations, I read the book. It's absolutely terrific." Because he was giving a shout out to my author friend, Liz Hyder. This was for the publication of Bear Mouth, her first book. Since then, she's written two others, the latest of which, The Illusions, Fintan hasn't read yet. If we were doing a Gambling Files podcast book club, we would be waiting for you.
I didn't see that coming. I was expecting some like random Only Fools and Horses trivia. Did you know?
No, it's a completely true story as well.
Oh, I know. I'd completely believe that. Oh my God.
By all accounts, he was a lovely fellow. He died 2 years ago, maybe. A very, very nice man. Big fan of Liz's work.
Clearly a man of taste.
Clearly. He obviously made the time.
His busy schedule. Good for him. Glad he had the time. I hear actors have a lot of downtime between filming.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Obviously, he's not a chairman. So Only Fools and Horses. I'm glad we've covered that. So I'm going to keep it short and sweet now. We're gonna meet David Danzis, and we're going to talk about Atlantic City.
Yeah, he's great. Really smart.
Clarion.
Clarion.
Clarion Gaming.
Exclusive event sponsors of the Gambling Files podcast. Hello, and no, hang on, that's on the other recording. We join our guest on this episode, new to the podcast. Who knows? Who knows if we'll ever see him again? You know how that goes. We're joined by David Danzis. I've already fucked your name up, David. David Danzis.
There you go. Yep. Nailed it.
But I should have got it right because I like the Misfits and, you know, Glenn Danzig, it's not a million miles away.
Nope.
So I'm sorry about that. I started badly there. David, where are you from and what do you do?
I am from New Jersey, and I write for a little website called playnj.com, as well as our sister site, playny.com, where I cover legal gambling, including Atlantic City casinos, online sports betting, and online casino.
Thank you. So the reason that I got in touch and the reason I asked you to come on a podcast, the gambling industry's number one podcast, we like to claim, is I saw the article that you did, which was on PlayNJ, I think, which was all about how the figures reported by Atlantic City casinos are hiding the true story. That when you break it down, it's not looking very good at all. So could you, because Fintan hasn't read it, he never does his homework.
Well, I'll give you the cliff notes. And basically, we have to, a little bit of history lesson is required in order to kind of get everybody up to speed. So for any of your listeners who may not be aware, Atlantic City has been on some pretty tough times for going well over a decade now. Starting around 2008, 2009 with the Great Recession and the launch of legal gambling in our neighboring state of Pennsylvania, Atlantic City lost a lot of business. And it resulted in 5 casinos closing in the city between 2012 and 2014. So we went from 12 casinos in Atlantic City down to 7 in just a matter of 2 years. And there was a lot of talk about how do we get the city back? How do we reinvigorate the economy a little bit. And that's how we ended up with legal sports betting, not just here in New Jersey, but actually across the entire United States. It was a direct result of what was happening in Atlantic City. But nonetheless, around 2018, we get legal sports betting and we also open up 2 new casinos in Atlantic City. So we're back up to 9 and everybody thinks things are going just great. And then, of course, the world changed in 2020. And since then, there has been sort of a, I don't want to call it a misunderstanding. I think it's more of just hopeful thinking, wishful thinking, if you will, that people are looking at gambling revenue and equating that with economic success for Atlantic City. And having covered this industry for as long as I have, revenue is just but one of, is one metric that casinos use to judge success. And most often, it's actually not a reliable metric of success because there are a lot of factors that play into revenue, right? We'll just take one, for example. We'll talk about table games. Say you had a whale come in, a couple $1 million, has a bad weekend, and the casino takes all his money. Well, that looks like it's a good month for the casino. But then next month, that whale's not there. And all of a sudden, now you have this 10, 15, 20% dip in revenue. Well, now you say the casino's not doing well. Well, that's why revenue is misleading. It's largely dependent on the day-to-day factors of business. A much more reliable metric of success is profit. And cutting right to the chase, and the point of my article is that We are now in the third straight quarter of profit declines for the Atlantic City market. We're coming off an entire year in 2022 where profits were down. And of our nine casino operators, really only two of them are trending in the right direction. So taken as a whole, there are a lot of concerning things happening here in Atlantic City that, quite frankly, my peers in the media industry and even in the gambling industry are just not paying attention to. And, you know, thankfully, my article did get some attention, did get notice both locally and nationwide. And people are now starting to talk about what's actually happening in Atlantic City. And hopefully we can start to find some solutions, because right now we don't have any.
So I was talking to Fintan about this earlier, right? And I was saying that I think you would probably see similar issues in Vegas. And that there are ways to sort of massage the way that money is earned so that everything looks absolutely brilliant. You got your dividend. And, you know, one of my major beefs with the world and how it runs at the moment is that when you have the constant pressure of dividends and quarterly reports and all of that stuff, that you're making short-term decisions all the time. And like, if you look at Vegas right now, what you've got is sky high room rates, like the highest I've ever seen. The food is incredibly expensive. Almost every casino is charging for parking again. The resort fees are high. You know, it's like people are being squeezed at every single point in the journey. And people will put up with that for a little while, but they're not going to put up with it for that long. Now, Atlantic City isn't Las Vegas. I'm not dissing AC by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all.
But, you know, it's even the great businessman Donald Trump, even his casinos went bankrupt there. And that man's a fucking genius. And I know that because he said it.
I heard him say it more than once. You're right. No, you hit the nail on the head. And I think back to when I first started covering Atlantic City casinos. I had a lot of casino executives want to sort of take me under their wing, if you will, right? Sort of teach me the ropes through their eyes, through the way that they see it, which was admittedly a good education, a good crash course. But one of the first things that I was ever told was, you know, revenue is what you put on paper. Profit is what you take to the bank. And what this person was basically telling me was kind of the anecdote that I explained before, right? About how one good month can kind of change revenue. But it's even deeper than that. You know, revenue can really be finagled to say whatever you want it to. You know, you touched on a couple of them: raising room rates, charging more for food. All of this goes into what casinos report as revenue. But at the end of the day, it's not necessarily what they're keeping as profit, right? Because they have to pay their vendors, they have to pay their employees, they have to pay their utility costs. And all of those things continue to rise. So we're really at an odd point in the hospitality and gaming industry, where casino executives are still operating like it's immediately post-COVID, right? Where I remember, I won't throw him under the bus because he hates the fact that I quoted him on this, but a well-known casino executive here in Atlantic City basically told us, it was around July of 2020, you know, that we've gotten used to doing more with less, and we're going to continue to do that, right? He said the quiet part out loud. And that's basically been their standard operating procedure since the summer of 2020. They've employed less people. Restaurants are open less. Lounges are open less. There's less slot attendants on the floor. There's less games open. And customers are just sort of expected to sort of deal with it, right? You know, you don't like it, go somewhere else is kind of their attitude. Well, people are going somewhere else. Yeah, I hate to be a Debbie Downer because I live outside of Atlantic City. You know, this is my home. But things are bad here. Things are not good. And it's frustrating as somebody who used to work for the local media. I used to work for the local newspaper here. And my colleagues are just not talking about this. And it's incredibly frustrating when I see my neighbors who have been laid off for over 3 years now, you know, completely leave the casino industry. They're now working in other industries and they're never going back. And they spent 20, 30 years in that industry, and it's just turned their back on them completely. and it's frustrating and it's demoralizing. And like I said, we need to start talking about solutions to the problem. And quite frankly, at this point in time, I just don't know what they are.
Well, shit, there goes my next question.
Do we know what the root causes are?
Well, I touched on one, right? Is the casino still having this idea that they can function with less, right? I think they're still, they're beholden to their shareholders, right? They're beholden to the people that make the decisions, not necessarily us as the plebes. You know, they don't really care if we're upset that there's no restaurants open on a Tuesday night. They don't give a shit if we're upset about that. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're increasing the returns for their shareholders. Unfortunately, the problem now, as I've explained, is those profits aren't really there. So they're not increasing value for the shareholders. So now they've kind of shot themselves in the foot because nobody's willing to work. Nobody wants to come back to work for crap wages. Nobody wants to deal with the public at this point. Let's be honest. I spent years working in the service industry. You couldn't pay me enough to go back right now and wait tables or bartend. There's not enough money in the world to make me do that. And you know, the casinos still have this idea, like I said, that they're almost antagonistic to the customer. You know, their mindset is if you don't like it, go somewhere else. And that may have been fine in the 80s and the 90s, but you know, I think there's only about four states left in the United States that don't have a casino right now. So, you know, these New Jersey, these Atlantic City casino executives who are used to having a monopoly no longer have that. So they don't have that fallback. And I don't think they know how to act. And I don't think they know how to respond.
So if we look at, if we use Vegas as the example, so like Vegas is doing a lot, I think, to provide more than just casinos. So, ice hockey teams, football teams, the baseball team is coming, the F1,
whatever
UFC.
They can fucking steal from Oakland.
Whatever else Oakland's got.
They pillage the entire city, right?
the residencies with Britney and whoever else they bring in and these kind of things. So there's Adele.
B-52s.
Wow, that's a residency.
Tom Jones and Wayne Newton are still performing in Vegas, just 25 years strong, both of them.
You see, they're catering to both ends of that market.
So if you kind of look at those kind of things of making it a destination, is I'm assuming Atlantic City's not doing that, or am I wrong?
They're trying, right? Okay. So you hit the nail on the head. And any industry expert I've ever talked to in the 10 years I've been doing this, they all point to when Vegas made that turn, right? And it was about the late 80s. It was Steve Wynn and a couple other guys who decided that convention business was really what was going to keep Vegas going. And they started catering to the non-gambling tourist. And if you look at Vegas right now, I did a story about this for the Press of Atlantic City before I left. So it was probably right around 2020. At that time, gambling revenue to non-gambling revenue in Vegas was about 30 to 70. Right, so only 30% of all the casino revenue in Las Vegas was from gamblers, which is absolutely mind blowing when you think about it, because they're still doing $1 billion months in Vegas. Atlantic City, it's about 80-20 gambling revenue to non gambling.
Got it.
They're trying hard. We opened up a new indoor water park. We did just get an entertainment residency from Spiegel World, the same company that does Absinthe and Opium in Las Vegas, right? The same company brought a show here to Atlantic City. It's called The Hook. They're doing that at Caesars Atlantic City. It's phenomenal. I saw it when it first opened. Amazing. But it's the first ever entertainment residency in Atlantic City's 45 years of legal gambling, which is mind-blowing, right? How is that possible? So to answer your question, Fenton, yes, they're trying, but it's not happening fast enough, and it's clearly not enough to make up for the losses that have been going on for over a decade.
So then if you extrapolate that out, they're cutting back on services to manage profits. So it feels like a classic kind of debt spiral, that like everything's going to slowly kind of fall apart until all of a sudden it falls off a cliff.
Correct.
Is that what we're heading for?
Yes, absolutely. And the only saving grace right now is online gambling. which I know both of you with your experience realizes how problematic that is, not just for the land-based operators, but quite frankly, and I don't mean to kind of get all meta here, but for society at large. When we're pushing online gambling as a solution to any problem, that should raise some red flags. And I know my paycheck and my livelihood depends on online gambling, so maybe I'm, you know, shooting myself in the foot by saying that, but the truth of the matter is that should not be the Band-Aid. That should not be the solution. And right now that is the only thing that's keeping some of these smaller operators open in Atlantic City.
It does kind of feel like there's a little bit of decisions being made 10 years too late kind of thing. And it's interesting. See, I've been bemoaning for months on this very podcast the fact that all of the traditional big names in gambling in the US completely missed the opportunity when it came to online gambling. Their brand leverage is unimportant now. It's meaningless, with the exception of BetMGM, but you know they're still third
At best. Yeah,
and it's an incredibly expensive third, and it's kind of if your individual operators, I mean, stop me if this is the case, but I don't think it is. But like iGaming could be part of a solution, or it, you know, it probably just end up being part of a solution that gives greater dividends to shareholders. But it could be part of a solution. If so, like when they were proposing legalizing gambling in South Africa, like 15 years ago, or whatever, they said, right, the licenses are going to go to the people that own a license for land-based. You've passed your checks. We know that you're fit and you know, good for purpose. We know that you know how to do the job. We know you know how to run it and follow regulations. So you guys can have the licenses, and we'll take it from there. And I don't believe they actually went through with that. It didn't kind of become legalized and mature in the way that you might expect after something like that. But that had been the plan. If that were the plan for New Jersey, then you've got the potential for joined up marketing through the app. Come to the casino, have a meal, get some points, do this, do that. And there's the potential to join it all up. Like I know one casino, a very, very prominent casino, white labels its online experience. So they're losing all of that marketing leverage. Which I think is just a crime. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know it's expensive to run an online casino. I know it's difficult. I know it requires loads of personnel and all that. But they're missing all of this data capture. They're missing all of these cool things that they can do. So it's really kind of sad that they can't do something like that in AC and say, look, use this as part of an overall solution. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on like that. I started out saying something really short, and then it just went wrong.
No, and words fell out. Don, you hit on a point, right? So New Jersey actually tried to do that. They actually did. When we passed online gambling legislation in 2013, part of the regulations were that any skin that was awarded had to be attached to a land-based operator. And that's, in theory, that's great. Unfortunately, what they did is they opened it up to more than just one skin per land-based operator, right? So you're allowed up to five. So right off the bat, simple math tells you, you know, we can have 45 online casinos here in New Jersey. That's ridiculous. You don't need 45, right? But then it got even worse when we passed online sports betting, because now it no longer needed to just be a land-based casino. They opened it up to racetracks as well. So, and again, I'm not disparaging racing. I love, you know, horse racing is part of New Jersey's history and culture, and I grew up around the track. I got no issue with it. But there is a big disconnect or a big gap between the customer who goes to the racetrack and the customer who goes to the casino. At least here in the U.S. there is. They are not a cross-section of demographic. Mm-hmm. So it sort of opened up this Pandora's box of, well, we're just going to let anybody have an online gambling skin. And we're just going to try to capture as many customers as we possibly can. And because of that, there wasn't a focus on that cross-marketing that you're referring to. Some of them do well. Some of the larger operators try. Caesars comes to mind, but they're still falling way short. And if they could figure out a way to, exactly as you said, bring the online customer to the land-based casinos. And of course, for their own, for their selfish benefits, the inverse of that, right? Get some of their online players or some of their land-based players to start embracing online. Absolutely, there's an opportunity for growth there. For some reason, all of these people who get paid a whole lot of money in the C-suites and these executive offices haven't figured out how to do that yet. And for the life of me, I can't understand why, because it doesn't seem like it's that difficult.
Nobody ever asks me. I think
I'll give them your number next time.
Do it. How many people are in New Jersey? Now, let's discount John Bon Jovi because he's probably got 98% of the wealth.
I'm sorry, we broke up a little bit there. What was your question, John?
How many people are in New Jersey, and don't count John Bon Jovi because he's probably got 98% of the wealth?
There are 9 million people in the state of New Jersey.
Okay, so that's quite a few. 45 online casino. That does seem quite a lot of choice for 9 million people.
There are not 45 operating licensed online casinos. There's the opportunity for 45.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at the moment there's about 27 online casinos, and
that's nowhere near enough.
14 online sports books.
Is that all? Is there that I might be incorrect on this. The airport, the nearest airport to Atlantic City, is not international, is it?
It is, but it's a joke of an airport.
When you say international, does that mean flights from Canada?
So it claims to be an international airport. It is not. It used to be.
Okay.
Actually, Atlantic City was the first airport in the United States. It's where the term airport was coined.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, Bader Field was actually where the term airport was first used, and it was the first airport in the United States. But I digress. That airport is no longer in existence. Right? That's something, right? A little trivia there. So the Atlantic City International Airport is actually three towns away from Atlantic City. And it only has two regional air carriers who basically only go to Florida and South Carolina. So not exactly tapping the prime demographic for wealthy gamblers.
No, and it's interesting when you look at the way that McCarran operates in Las Vegas. I mean, it's one of my least favorite airports in the world, McCarran. It's a shitty experience, as is LAX. Charles de Gaulle in Paris as well, also a shitty airport. But it's like, if you look at where they bump flights up to, you know what I mean? They're switched on. Where they want people from, they are totally switched on, totally clued up. They get the carriers, they make the space, they make it happen. I can't help but think that there is a link between getting the players that you want to come and spend money in the casino for, you know, that you want them to, and making it possible for them to get there. I think there's a link, David. I'm not 100% sure.
Years ago, we had a direct train route from New York City to Atlantic City, which seems brilliant, right? I mean, you're tapping one of the largest metropolitan areas in the United States and trying to get them to a regional gambling location. And the casinos actually had to subsidize the train because there wasn't enough passengers on it. But the problem, the reason why there were no passengers on it is because nobody knew the train existed. There was no advertising for it. If you went to the train station and asked, how do I get to Atlantic City? Even most of the people who worked there didn't know that there was this train that had this direct route from New York City and Penn Station directly to Atlantic City. So after 3 years, they canceled it and they've never tried again. So, you know, when we talk about sort of what's wrong with Atlantic City, Atlantic City is what's wrong with Atlantic City, right? They can't get out of their own way, no matter how hard they try. For every step forward, we are notorious for taking three steps backwards. And it just kind of seems like we continue to compound those problems. And that was sort of the point of my story was, you know, we're sitting here and we're talking about how great gambling revenue is. But really, we're discounting the fact that all of that revenue is coming from online casino and online sports betting. Our brick and mortar operators are suffering, which by extension means the local community around there is suffering because all the people who work there are not doing as well as they once were. So there is this ripple effect that happens, and it all starts in Atlantic City and it ends there as well. And yet we just keep doing the same dance over and over and over again, hoping for a different result. I think there's a term for that.
Yeah. I do have one more little question. So the drop in five casinos between, I think it said 2012-2014.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Chris Christie was, and I do love saying his name, Fintan, try it, say Chris Christie.
Chris Christie.
It's satisfying, isn't it?
It is. It is.
I hope he's copyrighted that. I mean, there was a lot of bluster from office about what they were going to do, and they were going to revitalize this and that and the other. And to his credit, I mean, I observe U.S. politics. I know a little about that nice Mr. Christie. A lot of effort and a lot of money went into trying to rejuvenate things. Was any of that successful? Was it like another short term fix? Because like he was making sounds like, yeah, we're gonna do this.
So Chris Christie, as governor of New Jersey, actually took control of the city of Atlantic City. The state took away local power and decided that they would be in charge of all decision making for the city. So any budgetary decisions, any personnel decisions, any decision of consequence, really, is made by the state of New Jersey, not by local officials in Atlantic City anymore. And that's been going on since 2016. Has it helped? Depends who you talk to, I guess. From a macro perspective, the city's budget is balanced, or as balanced as it could be. I shouldn't say it's balanced. That's probably not the right term. They've managed to correct what had been going wrong for decades. So Atlantic City is no longer hemorrhaging money. They're definitely not balanced. I shouldn't say that. They're no longer hemorrhaging money. So in that sense, yes, Chris Christie's policies helped. The quality of life in the city has never been worse. The appearance of the city has never been worse. The politics of the city have never been worse. And as we've been talking about for the last half hour, the city's primary economic engine is sputtering. So in a word, John, did Chris Christie's policies help Atlantic City? No, they did not.
Okay. Those five casinos that disappeared, that was, hang on, let me think, where are we, 2023 now? So that those casinos shutting down, that was just after the 2008 got awful. Jesus Christ, what a mess that was. I wish I'd never read those Michael Lewis books about that, you know, because I wish I didn't understand the 2008 economic collapse, because now it just makes me think.
It pisses you off, right?
Ah, it just makes you want to punch people. But finding the right people to punch, that's the problem. I'm not singling out Donald Trump, right? But when were his bankruptcies on the boardwalk?
So Trump's bankruptcies actually predated the recession. And at that time, Icahn Enterprises was already in the process of taking control of, oh, geez, he changed the name of the company 10 million times. I don't even know. Trump Resorts Entertainment at that point, TRE. So by 2012, Icahn was essentially running the casinos and leasing out the Trump name. So Trump had already gone through his Chapter 11 filings and emerged on the other side, and Carl Icahn had taken control of the company. So by the time the casinos closed, Trump was gone from the city, so to speak. The only thing that remained was his name on the buildings. So, you know, I will say this. Trump's history in Atlantic City is much more complicated than people make it out to be. There are still pockets of people in this city that, regardless of their politics, still speak very highly of him, because his properties, you know, I'll tell this story and I'll be quick. There was a food kitchen directly across from what was the Taj Mahal, now is Hard Rock. And that place was called Sister Jean's. And Sister Jean was a local celebrity here in Atlantic City, right? She was kind of our Mother Teresa. And she would just feed anybody and everybody. And it turned into a nonprofit organization that took up home in a church directly across the street from Taj Mahal. And every night after the Trump Taj Mahal had fed its VIP guests, they would send over all of the steak and lobster and fresh squeezed juice. And all, I mean, you name it, they would send it directly over to Sister Jean's. And for about a decade, Sister Jean's did not spend a single dollar on food for feeding the homeless in Atlantic City because it was all donated from Trump. So that's what I mean when I say his, now granted, I'm not saying Donald Trump had anything to do with that decision, right? That was most likely the people that he employed and you know, much smarter than all of us put together and decided that that would be great PR. But that has a lasting impact. That has a legacy here in Atlantic City that people still identify with. So,
for sure.
Like I said, his history here is complicated.
Listen. It maybe nobody knows that the real reason that decision was taken was just so that they could leave the fridges switched off.
Right, not pay the bill at the end of the night.
That's it. They were just saving electricity. Like, it didn't matter if it was going to homeless people. They were just like, fuck, we're not running the fridges. It costs a fortune. Get all that food out of here. Now, that's a surprising story. But as I like to say, when Trump was owning and operating his casinos on the boardwalk, you could have had a monkey shitting in a hat on the boardwalk and walked away a millionaire. Call me cynical, but I read an article, it might have been New York Post, it was a long time ago, but they talked to a load of tradespeople that had dealt with
trade. Oh, absolutely.
And it was not pretty reading. It was really disgusting, really disgusting. Ethically, just utterly corrupt.
My son's baseball coach, his father was actually, forget exactly what the trade was, but he essentially installed all the chandeliers at the Trump Taj Mahal. And Trump paid him about 10% of what the contract was signed for. And his business actually ended up folding and going under after that. So, like I said, it's a complicated legacy here.
That's not complicated. That is very black and white.
No, not for them. No, for them it's not. No. Although, I guess if they ended up I don't mean to make jest, but if they ended up in the homeless shelter line and got steak and lobster, maybe they felt a little better afterwards. But that's a bad joke.
Listen, any Republicans that are listening, I'm not singling out Donald Trump for any reason other than that he's a buffoon. It's nothing to do with his politics. David, thank you very, very, very much for excuse me. Sorry, thank you very, very, very much for joining us. Sorry to cut this so short. We're just busy executives. Fintan's
listen, I know when I'm in the presence of greatness, and I understand that you guys have more important things to do. So I'm going to check out now.
But we'll hopefully have you back at some point in the future.
I hope so as well, guys. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just @GamblingFiles. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.